The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
It's been 1 year since Kobe tragically passed, his beautiful daughter Gigi, and seven others. Obviously, Kobe's such a legend. One quote I want to share with you guys that he always said, the most important thing is to try and inspire people so they can be great at whatever they did. And I feel like that's what he truly embodied, to be better every day and inspiring others to be better every day as well, and the commitment to that. Max, I'll start with you. How will you remember Kobe?
Well, as a person, to the extent that I knew him, and I knew him a little bit when I was in L.A., I communicated with him pretty regularly. I was there for 6 years. He was, the first thing I think is he loved his family. Like, he loved his family. And he was interested in trying to make the world a better place. And what struck me about him is he was intellectually curious. Kobe was extremely bright. You know, when I think of the smartest athletes I've ever been around, Kobe's name pops to mind. But he was just, forget about, you know, of the smartest athletes, he was just a very bright guy. And though he didn't have a ton of formal education because he went right from high school to the pros, he had a worldly education. And he was a pleasure to talk to and interesting to talk to. But Stephen A., the reason we're interested in Kobe Bryant, the reason we got to know him, is because he's one of the greatest basketball players who ever lived. And his position in the American and even worldwide sports landscape, I think, is this. In a world where everyone wanted to be like Mike, and I brought this up after his tragic passing, there's only one man who dared to try to do it. He didn't try to some kind of asymmetrical approach like LeBron James, who clearly idolized Jordan, but did something different. A hybrid of Michael Jordan and Magic Johnson. He wasn't a big like Shaq or someone like that, or he didn't try to do it some other way. He said, it seemed, when he looked at Jordan as a little kid, that's my spirit animal right there. I want to do that. I want to be a better version of that. Turned out to be the same size, same game, kind of dressed and talked similarly, and tried to do it better than Mike, even wore 24. He was the only guy in a whole world that wanted to be like Mike who was basically playing one-on-one with Michael Jordan his entire career. Because Jordan set the standard and Kobe said, I want to do that and I want to do it by doing the same thing but better. That level of competitiveness, that level of drive is what I'll always remember about Kobe Bryant. And when people talk about Mamba mentality, that's what it is. No matter what your grasp, no matter what your reach, may your reach always exceed your grasp. That was Kobe Bryant, and it seemed, in fact, that nothing could exceed his grasp and that he had the world in his hands. Even after his career, Stephen A., where he immediately wins an Academy Award and I always believed was eventually going to own the Los Angeles Lakers, he was so vital and present. It is still shocking to think that he's no longer in the world. And those are my thoughts.
Well, you know, I think about him all the time. He was a friend and a brother. And I loved him, and I'm sure I'm speaking for a lot of other people who knew him. Michael Wilbon knew him better. All of the players that were close to him in the NBA, his true contemporaries, they obviously knew him better than me. But to be 12 years older than him, and to have known him since he entered the league, or even before that, I met him once before that when he was in Ardmore, Pennsylvania, Lower Merion. But to know him for as long as I did, you know, again, 12 years older than him, I looked up to him. Because you used the words, you know, just intellectually curious. I'll just simply say he was brilliant. He spoke three languages fluently, obviously English, Spanish, and Italian. I believe that he was almost finished, if he had not already been finished, learning German and Mandarin. Just a brilliant brother, business savvy, highly intellectual, incredibly tenacious in everything that he decided to do. And he was a true, true motivator. He was about pushing you to be all that you could be. He certainly did that with me. We used to talk about what he looked at me doing. Some of the career aspirations that I have fed off of conversations with him because he was that brilliant. And when he spoke, you listened because you knew that he was somebody that had something very, very significant to say. He wasn't about the games. The only game he was about was the game of life and pursuing it with a level of vigor that could ultimately help you ascend to heights that you did not even know that you could reach. And when he talks, when you talk about him being who he was clearly an ambassador as well, because he was somebody that grew strength over recognizing his ability to motivate so many other people. Because when he was younger, that wasn't the case. He came across as being about himself. He was about winning at all cost, having that tenacious mentality, becoming a champion, solidifying himself as one of the greats to have ever played this game. And then obviously, through trials and tribulations, he grew to appreciate so many more things about his life and about the life of so many other people, particularly that of his wife, his beautiful children. The list goes on and on and on. And so as a result of that, he just became more and more comfortable in his own skin. And the more he conquered challenges, the more at peace he became. And, you know, just being a five-time champion, a league scoring champion, a league MVP, you know, an Olympic gold medalist, and all of this other stuff, just a phenomenal things that he had accomplished in his career. The last time I saw him was on New Year's Eve, 3.5 weeks before he passed away. And, you know, we were partying together New Year's Eve in L.A., and it was the happiest that I had ever seen him. He was completely at peace. His guard was down. Anything that he had to prove was only to himself. He knew that he had reached a point, a stratosphere in his life and in his world where he was completely validated, and there was nothing else to debate or argue about his stature, his cachet, and his ascension in the world of sports and beyond. And so when you look at that, to know Kobe for as long as I've known him, the Mike Wilbons of the world and so many others that have been covering the NBA for so long, to see him in that place mentally, emotionally, spiritually, it was just not only incredibly uplifting, it was just a beautiful, beautiful thing to see. Because at age 41, just imagine that for a second, y'all, to be 41 years of age and to know, okay, you've achieved the level of success, wealth, significance, cachet, all of these different things. There are no more questions. The only pressure that's left in your life is the pressure you bring upon yourself. And that's it. We all dream to have that kind, to reach that kind of place mentally, emotionally, and spiritually. And he was at a point where, again, talking about his beautiful daughter, Gianna, she's going to UConn, Stephen A. She's going to be All-American, Stephen A. She's going to the WNBA, and she's going to be a star in that, too. Wait. Wait until you see this girl. That's how he talked about her. He loved all his children, and he was so in love with his wife, Vanessa. To know that, you know, at age 41, such a wonderful life, what he had evolved into, such a wonderful person, is gone from us. You know, read Bill Plaschke's column in the Los Angeles Times today. It pretty much says it all. You still can't believe he's gone. You still feel his presence. You still feel him around you. But that presence that you feel also serves to remind you that he is no longer here. And when you see that video of him sitting courtside with his daughter and LeBron coming over to hug him, look at the smile that was on his face. Look at how happy he was and how content he was with his life and where he was, his place in it. I mean, to see him gone now, it just still hurts. It hurts a lot. And it's going to hurt for a very, very long time. I think it's going to hurt forever, because no matter how much further in life we all go, the fact that you know that he was gone at the age of 41 is just something that's pretty damn hard to get over. when he had so much that he was still willing to, looking forward to giving the world. God has a plan for all of us. We understand that. But some are a bit more harder to stomach than others.
No question, Stephen A. And one thing I just want to mention is he was a devout Catholic, and he and Gigi did go to church that morning, went to Mass before they tragically died. And Stephen A., I'm sorry for your loss. Obviously, I know so many people at home are hurting, and we lift up Vanessa and the three other children in prayer today, his three daughters. We know how difficult this past year has been, and of course today. And I just want to say what the Mamba mentality means to me on a more positive note is every day showing up, facing adversity head on, and trying to be a better version of yourself, only comparing yourself to who you were yesterday and striving for greatness. And he's inspired me, and he's inspired, I know, so many people around the world and will continue to, because he always tried to elevate himself spiritually, mentally, physically, emotionally, not just on the basketball court. So rest in peace, Kobe Bryant. It's been 1 year, but his legacy lives on and remains strong. Hey, Molly Karam here, and thanks so much for listening to the First Take podcast. Vivid Seats wants to get you to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part, each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seats rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As the official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code TAKE. That's code TAKE. Visit vividseats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats. Experience it live. Hey, hey, I'm Molly Karam, and thanks so much for listening to the First Take podcast. You can now stream the most MLB games on DirecTV without a satellite dish. Yes, catch the clutch hits, strikeouts, grand salamis, web gems with nothing on your roof. So whoever's up there, whether it's roofers, Santa, birds, old-time chimney sweepers, moody teenagers, thrill-seeking raccoons, you name it, they won't find a satellite dish, but you will find your MLB games on DirecTV. That means DirecTV is your home for baseball this season. Root, root, root with nothing on your roof. Yes, stream your team. Call 1-800-DIRECTV or visit DirecTV.com to sign up today. Claim based on the total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Thanks so much for listening to the First Take Pod. Have a fabulous day. We head to Detroit. Matthew Stafford not expected to return to the Lions this offseason. Sources telling our Adam Schefter over the weekend that the team actively seeking to trade their number one pick from the 2008 draft and will be taking offers this week. He has started 168 games for the Lions, Max. Which team should want to trade for Matthew Stafford? Max.
I'm sorry. What's the question, Molly?
Which team should want to trade for Matthew Stafford? He doesn't want to be with the Lions anymore.
Who should want him? I would say it's the New England Patriots. And I would say that presuming that the assumption is that any team that's trading for Stafford, either Deshaun Watson and Aaron Rodgers weren't available or they couldn't land them, right? So let's get that out of the way. That said, Matthew Stafford is a real – I thought a couple of years, a year ago, that they were going to trade for Matthew Stafford, that that's who Belichick was going to target. Because Stafford's a guy who hasn't won a whole lot, but has, at least for the first half of his career, we looked at him and said, that guy has like top five arm talent. You know, he should be better than he is, and he's had some very good years and portions of good years. So the question is, what would he do? How would he perform in a better situation, right? Could he become a winning quarterback? Bill Belichick just won 7 games with a comeback in Cam Newton in a year where you couldn't practice, where there was a COVID outbreak on the team, where he had people opting out because of COVID and no offense to speak of. If Belichick had a real quarterback, and I think Matthew Stafford is one, what could he do then? And from Stafford's point of view, if a guy gets hung with a kind of like, well, yeah, he has talent, but he can't become a winner, what better place to go than to a coach who is considered the greatest of all time? It would also be interesting as an experiment, the way Brady going to Tampa was. Okay, what can he do here? Yeah, they're loaded, but what do you, well, he's in the Super Bowl. Okay, Matthew Stafford, you haven't been able to win a lot. Okay, Belichick, Brady left you without a quarterback. It seems like a good fit to me.
First of all, I won't even spend time getting on you the way that you've been raving in terms of your belief in Cam Newton. All of a sudden, if Belichick had a quarterback, what he would do? I mean, damn. You know what I'm saying? I thought you believed in Cam Newton. That's what you've been saying. That's what you've been saying. So you can get back to that later. Here's my thing. The Chicago Bears have a defense.
Sure
they desperately need a quarterback. The San Francisco 49ers have a defense. They'll need a quarterback. Life isn't so beautiful with Jimmy G anymore, Mollywood. I just want you to know that.
Oh, my goodness.
Okay, so definitely they could use a quarterback. Now, me, this is selfish purposes. They can't get him. I understand that. I'd give anything for the Steelers to get somebody to succeed the Big Ben Roethlisberger era. I think that Big Ben Roethlisberger, I think he's going in this direction. Listen, I'm thankful for his years of service. He was great. If he wants to come back, that's fine. But I think that in terms of – I think we need a younger quarterback with fresher legs that can be a little bit mobile at the very least, that clearly has the arm strength with all of those weapons that you have available that could help that defense out because you're doing something for them offensively. And might be a little bit younger and, dare I say, more hungrier because we know that Matt Stafford has never had any kind of postseason success playing for the Detroit Lions. Mm-hmm. So if anybody could use a new beginning, it would be him. I definitely would be all for that.
All right. I'm going to throw three
Pittsburgh.
More teams.
I think that's
also
a good
the
fit in Pittsburgh.
I've got three more. Washington needs a quarterback, Broncos, Indianapolis Colts. So we can add those to the list as well.
First Take fans, listen up. Have you heard you can listen to episodes of this very show ad-free on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership? That's right. All your favorite First Take episodes can be heard on Amazon Music ad-free. But that's not all. You can listen to other top podcasts like The Low Post and PTI ad-free as well. They also have favorite shows like The Daily, Part of My Take, and Up First, all without ads. You know what this means? Uninterrupted listening, so no more cliffhangers. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts, so we know they definitely have something for you. And it's already included in your Prime membership. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app for free or go to Amazon.com/First Take. That's Amazon.com/First Take to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code FIRSTTAKE and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to gamble responsibly. See BetMGM.com for terms. This U.S. promotional offer not available in D.C., Mississippi, North Carolina, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 for New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. For Massachusetts, 1-800-327-5050. For Iowa, 1-800-BETS-OFF. For Puerto Rico, 1-800-981-0023. For West Virginia, visit 1-800-GAMBLER.net. First bet offer for new customers only. Subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel.
All I gotta say is sweet revenge for our next guest, Dustin Poirier. So good to see you this morning. Thank you for being with us. What a show. Knocking out Conor McGregor. The whole world was watching. Again, thank you for the time. But I want to start with, obviously, you fought him back in 2014. It was a different result. You even things up. How different was this Conor than the Conor you fought back then?
I'm not sure. I would assume he was, you know, better 6 years removed from the first fight, you know, constantly training and growing and just becoming a better fighter. I would think he's a better fighter, but personally, the aura felt different. You know, I didn't put as much thinking into the lead up of this fight and to the critics as I did the first one.
Did the aura feel differently to you, Dustin? Because, and first of all, congratulations, because I didn't pick you to win this fight. So damn it, I was wrong. Let's be clear about that. But you know, coming into this fight, when you talk about the aura, it seemed to be a little bit different. Is that because of the 6 years? Is it because of Conor's inactivity? Or is it because Conor had lost to Nurmagomedov and the luster that he once had didn't seem to be there? What do you believe the reason for that was?
I think it has nothing to do with Conor. I believe the reason for me feeling that way is personal, myself. I think my outlook on fighting and it's just different. You know, I'm not a 6 years ago, I was deer in the headlight. And now I just know what I got to do.
Yeah, I want to focus on you, Dustin. Congratulations, a tremendous win, but it's not like it's your first. I'm reminded of a scene in Cinderella Man, the movie of heavyweight champion James J. Braddock. And he's fighting, there's a scene where he's fighting John Henry Lewis, who is also a light heavyweight champ. And in John Henry Lewis's corner, his corner says, "What's the matter with you? You beat this guy last time, like a couple months ago." And he looks at his corner and says, "That ain't the same guy. That's not the same guy. You were always a good fighter, but recently you've been on a tear. The names on your resume recently, not just Connor, Holloway, Alvarez, Gaethje. So if this is about you, what's changed? And why? You said your outlook, but why? What changed it?"
I'm not sure. Just maturity as a man, maturity in the sport, taking those losses and always coming back and building myself up. Just confidence. Constant evolution, you know, always trying to get better and always remaining a student of the game, always learning and just working on things. I just know who I am as a fighter now. I'm not trying to prove it to myself. I know.
Dustin, let me ask you this. Connor came out and he said he wants the trilogy soon. He wants the third fight before this summer. What are your thoughts on that?
I mean, we'll see what happens. UFC has my number. They want to make this fight happen. You know, we'll get it going. We'll get the negotiations going and figure out a date and everything that comes along with that. But, yeah, I mean, we're 1-1.
Dustin, he didn't appear disrespectful to you in any way before the fight and definitely after. But he did appear to, attribute the loss primarily to inactivity. Can you speak to what kind of role you believe that may have played in your beating him Saturday night?
It's tough to say. I feel like the inactivity or the ring rust, people call it, is different for everyone. You know, it affects everyone differently. He fought one time last year, as did I. I fought once in 2020, you know. I don't really play into all that stuff.
Dustin, looking not to look past McGregor or your next fight, but there's another guy who you fought for the title and you came up short the first time. And if he's still going to be active, I would imagine you'd be interested in fighting again. And that's the baddest man in the division, at least as it stands right now, Nurmagomedov. Are you interested in that rematching? What would be different the next time around?
I would do even more work against the fence. You know, I knew he was a good wrestler. We knew his grappling's incredible. And I knew he was going to be tough against the fence, but it was a whole nother level of IQ and understanding that I felt him having when we were in those grappling positions and up against the fence and he was pressuring me. You know, the guy's understanding of balance and weight distribution and where my feet were, and it was really impressive to be on that side of it and have it done to you. You know, the guy is good. You're right. But yes, I'm definitely interested in whatever I got to do to be the world champ.
Dustin, I don't know if anybody's ever asked you guys this question, but I'm going to ask it right now. When I think about Conor McGregor, I think about two for UFC fights in the last 4 years, and I'm thinking about he lost to Nurmagomedov. Now he's lost to you. As a fighter, as a champion yourself, do you feel he's worthy of a title shot? If you guys were to end up fighting in May or whatever, is he worthy? And when I say Conor McGregor, I'm talking about any fighter in his position. Are they worthy of a shot, considering the fact that they really haven't won a fight outside of Cowboy Cerrone in the last 4 years?
It's a great argument. It's not my – I feel like if Khabib really is retired, this fight last weekend was the best. I was one fight removed, one victory removed from a title shot. I think I put myself back in position to fight for the belt again. And if Khabib really is retired, I believe I should be the undisputed world champion. But with Conor getting a title shot or not, that's up to Dana. You know how this thing goes. I don't call those shots.
All right. Well, Dustin, enjoy this one. You put on such a show. So thank you for entertaining all of us. And stay safe during these crazy times. We look forward to talking to you soon. Maybe it'll be this trilogy coming up before the summer.
Congratulations.
Take care.
Interesting times ahead. Thank you guys so much. I appreciate it.
No question. Thank you for the time. All right, guys, let's keep it moving. We had some other champions in action trying to make it to a Super Bowl with Aaron Rodgers. Didn't happen. He said he's unsure about his future in Green Bay after Tom Brady and the Bucks knocked the Packers out of the running on Sunday for his second Super Bowl. Brett Favre had this to say. Listen.
I wouldn't pay much attention to it. I think frustration, disappointment, hurt, pain, all were in that that sound bite. Look. There's no way the Packers would do anything to jeopardize losing Aaron, and unless Aaron just chooses to retire, which I would be shocked. The guy's playing better now than he's ever played. And without him, you certainly wouldn't have been even close to where you were yesterday. And I think the same will go for next year. And really the next few years, if he chooses to play, I wouldn't pay much attention to what he said.
The Packers have had two Super Bowls, but Hall of Fame quarterback play now for 29 straight years. Our next guest knows about Hall of Fame quarterback play, playing all those years with Peyton Manning. Our guy, Jeff Saturday. Good to see you, Jeff. We'll get to you in just a moment, sir. Stephen A., should we care what Favre thinks on this subject of Aaron Rodgers?
No. And I've said that early in the show, and I don't mean disrespect to Brett Favre by saying that. I want to be very clear about that. What I'm saying is that Brett Favre was treated entirely different by the Green Bay Packers than Aaron Rodgers has been treated by the Green Bay Packers, in my estimation. And based on that, it's two completely different experiences. Yes, he starred for the organization. Yes, he was a Super Bowl champion for the organization. Yes, they drafted Aaron Rodgers while he was there, even though Aaron Rodgers sat for 3 years, all of this other stuff. But Brett Favre was basically deified in Green Bay land. The organization, the fans, and everyone in between, because he was Brett Favre, he was treated entirely differently. Aaron Rodgers, from the time that he has gotten there, from the time that he has been the quarterback for this franchise, there have been elements of disrespect that has seeped out of the Packers organization for years. Management telling them to shut up and play. We make the decisions, not you. Do your job. Their hesitancy in giving him his money initially before they ultimately gave him a huge contract years down the road. You draft Jordan Love. You never draft a wide receiver in the first round for him to target, et cetera, et cetera. And then to cap everything off, you know, not only did you start the season by not drafting him on a wide receiver, but drafting Jordan Love, then you turn around. And what do? On a fourth and goal, you know, with the opportunity to tie the game, you're down 8 in an NFC championship game, knowing that the alternative is to give Tom Brady the football. You're not asking Tom Brady to score, Jeff Saturday. You're not asking him to kick a field goal or to score a touchdown. No. All you need for Tom Brady to do is to get a first down, if not two, because they had 3 timeouts and a 2-minute warning. Okay, that's all you're asking to do. And you choose that option by kicking a field goal as opposed to looking at Aaron Rodgers and saying, you that bad man, it's your show. Take us there. You haven't done it yet. You had a couple of opportunities you missed. We gonna give this fourth down to you. This is your team. You didn't do that. To me, it was the ultimate disrespect. It was the nail in the coffin. And as far as I'm concerned, even though they're not that stupid, they won't get rid of them. Of course not. But if I'm Aaron Rodgers, I let them know I don't want to be here. I really would.
Those are not bad arguments. But if the question is, do I care what Brett Favre thinks about this? I do. Like, let me see. Has there been any other longtime Packers quarterback who's won a Super Bowl in Green Bay where his successor was drafted in the first round to replace him while he still had plenty of gas in the tank? And then was eventually actually the difference is you talk about respect. Favre was shown the door. Aaron Rodgers hasn't been shown the door yet. So do I put stock in what that quarterback might have to say about the state of mind of the guy who's in his exact same position? Of course I do.
Yeah.
What?
He couldn't make up his mind whether he wanted to retire.
What do you
say,
Stephen?
He used to hold him hostage during training camp. Jeff Saturday, am I wrong about that? He used to sit up there and go, I don't know whether I want to play or not or whatever.
That's what he did the last two, that, 3 years in Green Bay.
And then Aaron Rodgers, who'd been holding the clipboard for several years and was a first-round pick and turned out to be one of the best who ever did it, was ready, and Favre was gone. So do I put stock in the interpretation of what Aaron Rodgers is going through from Brett freaking Favre? Of course I do. And for all the disrespect you say they've shown Aaron Rodgers, and I agree. I think Favre was a little more loved than Aaron Rodgers, also by the fans. And I don't think it was deserved. I think Rodgers is a little better than Favre. But I think when Favre does have that just draw the play up in the dirt with the stick, having fun out there thing, that is infectious. People do like that. And Rodgers took a more cerebral approach. They were both all-time greats. Do I think Favre's opinion that Aaron Rodgers, when he calms down, is going to see basically – hey, we won a playoff game last year with 13 wins. We won two playoff games this year with 13 wins. Maybe I should stick around? Yeah, or that he should stick around? Yeah, and for all your talk about no first-round picks for receivers, that's true. They didn't. But Jordy Nelson and Greg Jennings and Devontae Adams, he's had some guys who can catch the ball. And he's in a pretty good situation right now. And furthermore, Jeff, I don't think Favre is talking with an agenda here. Would I take it with a grain of salt if Favre was kind of downing Aaron Rodgers somehow or otherwise speaking out of the side of his mouth, or I felt like he had an agenda to make himself look better or Aaron Rodgers' work look worse? Yeah, but I don't see that here. I just see a Packers fan and a guy who's been in that exact position telling you what he really believes. So, yeah, I take stock in it.
Yeah, no, I could agree more with you, Max. I mean, the bottom line is Aaron Rodgers was – his feelings were hurt, right? And Stephen A lot of your points lead to you understanding why his feelings have been hurt. And so all of that buildup, right, he's been really, kind of passive about what happened in the draft last year. And even leading up, right, he was, hey, I'm full-on team member. I'm going to do it this way. And I think it all kind of culminated right after that game. And there is a lot of pain. There is a lot of suddenness. There is a lot of sadness as games end. And when he said, you know, there's a lot of guys whose futures are uncertain, including mine. No. There are a lot of guys whose futures are uncertain. Yours is not, right? You are going to be the quarterback of the Green Bay Packers, or you're going to retire. That's going to be the two options. And I do not think he's going to retire. I think Favre understands what he was speaking out of. And that's why I say you don't dismiss what Brett Favre said, because all of us who have been in that locker room after a championship game and the frustration of what it looks like, can Love even compete with Aaron Rodgers? Right? Not even close. It's not even the same ballpark right now. So the Green Bay Packers understand they have the NFL MVP sitting in their locker room. Mm-hmm. And you would be foolish. It would end up costing the head coach's job, the general manager job, Mark Murphy's job. If you traded away because he was unhappy at this moment to some other organization, he's going to do what Tom Brady did in Tampa to another team. He's going to elevate them, give them a shot at the Super Bowl. He's going to do all of those things. If you look in Green Bay, they're still poised to do the same thing, Stephen A. Like, they're 13-3, they lost the game. And I do agree with you, the insult of the fourth down. I 100% agree with you. I don't care how many different ways in your head you spell that out. You had your best on the field with a shot, with an opportunity, and you didn't give them that. I'm with you. And do I think that was a shot across the bow to Aaron Rodgers? I don't. I think that was a bit of Matt LaFleur decision-making, too many analytics. Like, at some point, you got to roll the dice, no risk it, no biscuit, similar to B.A. But I do think Favre makes really good points. Green Bay is not going to give him up. I don't care how frustrated he is. You have to go back in. If you're the Green Bay Packers organization, go back in and whatever you got to do to get it right, whether it's draft a guy, new contract, whatever those things are to get him feeling the love of the organization. He is your future, but he can't sit out, Stephen A., because he's 37.
I got to respond to you, Jeff.
Not like Deshaun Watson, right?
I got to respond to you. That's what I'm trying to do here. Here's the deal, Jeff. Okay. I'm not saying that the Packers should get rid of him. That would be dumb. The issue is, should we care about what Brett Favre thinks? And I don't mean to be dismissive and disrespectful towards Favre. That's not my objective here. What I'm saying is, what I'm trying to highlight is that Favre lived in an entirely different world in Green Bay than Aaron Rodgers has in Green Bay. And this is not one play or one situation where the coach made a mistake. He didn't show faith in me. No, it's been an ongoing dilemma with Aaron Rodgers spanning years. You yourself and others have been on the air in the past wondering when the rubber would meet the road when it came to Aaron Rodgers in Green Bay because of apparent and sometimes reported friction that existed between him and the organization. I'm saying all of that is why I dismissed Favre, because only the thing I'm trying to say is because Brett Favre lived in an entirely different world in Green Bay. He was treated differently. Aaron Rodgers is not the same thing.
But you're
That's
acting,
all I'm talking about. It's foreign.
I think
it's foreign.
Yeah. I do think I think though that Green Bay understands how much they need Aaron Rodgers a little bit like their front office understands they need Rodgers more now than they needed Favre at the end at the latter part of his career. And I think they understand that, right? So I think from the reason Favre is speaking that is because they did know in Green Bay, right? They knew that Rodgers was gonna come over and transition in a very smooth way after Favre left. And to your point, Favre kind of brought that on himself by faking the retirement or whatever, or changing his mind about the retirement, all of those things. Aaron has not been that guy. He's been fairly steadfast in what he's going to do. But I think with where Love is, the difference is the appreciation, I think, comes more from management than it does the fans. And to your point, I mean, listen, man, Favre was beloved. And he also had brought the organization kind of out of, kind of the muck in the mud, right? And since Favre put him on that pedestal, now Aaron has taken it and kept ascending, but it's a little bit different. I think that's what happened with all those fans, and there is a little bit of difference of, how beloved Favre is in Green Bay. That's all true. I don't disagree, but I think Favre has a very he articulated himself very well. He understands how he's feeling at the moment. That's why I think you listen to him.
LaFleur blundered. No one's debating. I haven't heard one person defend him. LaFleur blundered. He took the hands out of – he took the ball out of Aaron Rodgers' hand, handed it to Tom Brady. That's a blunder, and we all agree with that. However, Aaron Rodgers was stuck with Mike McCarthy. The game had passed Mike McCarthy by pretty obviously. They weren't seeing eye to eye, and they really weren't in a position to win Super Bowls. The only reason they were competitive is because they had Aaron Rodgers. Then they brought in a young coach who – understood the modern game better, put him in a much better position to win. In his first year under the new coach, Aaron Rodgers was figuring it out, didn't look great, but they won 13 games and they beat Seattle in the playoffs. The next year, they win 13 games again. Now Aaron Rodgers has it figured out. He's the league MVP, and they win 2 games in the playoffs. It very nearly got to the Super Bowl. So he's in a better position now than he's been in years in Green Bay. It looks sustainable, that blunder aside. And in terms of Brett Favre, you know what? Brett Favre doesn't have to be right. He doesn't have to be right. The question is, as much as the world has changed in the NFL, Stephen A., he has been in this position before with this franchise.
That's right.
It was Aaron Rodgers who took his job. They drafted a guy just like they did with Rodgers that I'm sure made him mad. I've heard Brett Favre say recently he would take Devontae Smith number one if he was Jacksonville and not Trevor Lawrence. Brett Favre says some stuff that sounds crazy to me. But that's why I say, like Charles Barkley, when you're one of the all-time greats and you have an opinion about things and you're not scared to tell people, I find that interesting. And in this case, because I don't think Favre is talking with an agenda, I think the insight he has into what Rodgers is going through is valuable.
Right.
And I get where y'all are coming from. What I'm saying to you is this. To answer the question directly about Brett Favre, again, I'm reiterating that they come from two different worlds, even though they play for the same franchise. And Aaron Rodgers, it's not about the mistake that Matt LaFleur made on Sunday. It's that's the culmination of years of frustration that this man has been dealing with. We all know the Packers ain't stupid enough to let that man go. We all know that the Packers don't want to let that man walk out the door. We know that he's going to meet strong resistance if he tries to pull a Deshaun Watson. We get all of that. We understand it. And we don't anticipate that should happen. What I'm saying is that Aaron Rodgers and his years of frustration should have reached the culminating point, should have him wanting to be out of Green Bay. And Brett Favre speaking on it, I don't think that Brett Favre can relate to that because it was never that bad for Brett Favre anywhere in his career. That's what I'm saying.
That's fair. Let me wrap it up by saying this. Bart Starr played 16 years with the Green Bay Packers. Brett Favre, 16 years, and Aaron Rodgers. Might be time for greener pastures, but according to his CEO, Mark Murphy, he was just on WNFL radio in Green Bay, and he said, "We are not idiots. Aaron Rodgers is not going anywhere." We'll see what Aaron has to say about that. Let's keep it rolling here, guys. I got one more debate for us coming up. Ravens GM Eric DaCosta said in a season-ending press conference Monday that he plans to talk to Lamar Jackson in the next 10 days. That Lamar deserves a big extension in Baltimore. He's eligible this offseason. So, Max, that got us thinking. When it comes to quarterbacks, how many would you take before Lamar right now?
I would take seven guys before Lamar, or maybe six. I got to remember. I'll name them for you. We'll count them up, okay? And let me just be very clear. I think Lamar Jackson is excellent. And maybe he needs a dynamic playmaker to really show what he can do. I'm not discounting that, but I'm talking about right now. Patrick Mahomes, duh. Tom Brady just proved it yet again. Aaron Rodgers, who we were just discussing, of course. Deshaun Watson is amazing. I would take him over Lamar Jackson. Russell Wilson, still, I'd take over Lamar Jackson. Josh Allen and Lamar just went head-to-head. Lamar's got a great defense. Allen's got more weapons. Allen wins, and he does it in more of a traditional style that we know works. Lamar is trying to prove that what he can do works. It may work, and maybe he needs more help, but we need to see him prove it. And finally, here's the controversial one, I imagine, Justin Herbert. Guys, Justin Herbert is 22 years old. He just played for a coach that was so bad that the coach no longer has his job. They had the handcuffs on him all year. He does have weapons. Herbert has weapons that Lamar doesn't have, no doubt about it. But Justin Herbert, not just the eye test where his talent pops off the screen, with the handcuffs on, right? They didn't really let him do his thing. As a 22-year-old, just threw 31 touchdowns against 10 interceptions. So the 67% completion. So the numbers are there. And then when you just watch him throw that ball. Herbert, if I was starting a franchise, like if Trevor Lawrence turns out to be everything we think he is, he, as a rookie, will look as good as Justin Herbert. Herbert's already what people are hoping Trevor Lawrence is going to be. And when I look at Stephen A., you have compared him to who? Dan Marino. I've heard guys on our network compare him to Patrick Mahomes. I don't think he's quite Marino or Mahomes, but it is instructive that those are the names we're using. Those are the seven guys I would take before Lamar.
Jeff Saturday, do you see what I have to deal with? I'm listening to Mr. Cliff, Mr. Ravine, now have Tom Brady as number two on the list. This is what I have to deal with, Jeff. This is what I have to deal with. I just have to deal with. We've heard you. This is what I have to deal with. That's number one. Hell no. Listen. Here's the deal. I'm not taking Justin Herbert over Lamar Jackson. Not yet. I'm sorry. I know he can fling the football. It's cool. I get it. But damn it, I'm not taking him over Lamar Jackson. That's number one. Josh Allen, I got a lot of faith in Josh Allen. I really, really like this guy. But it's still, I'm not sold on him to that degree as of yet. The Russell Wilsons, the Deshaun Watsons, the Patrick Mahomes, that's a gimme. For one game, a Tom Brady, of course, even though I think over the course of 16 games, I'm going to look at the mobility of Lamar Jackson and not summarily dismiss that. So there's three to four guys definitively I would tell you I would take before Lamar Jackson. But I will remind you, Max Kellerman, it's kind of hard listening to you say these things when I don't know anybody that has raved more about Lamar Jackson and what he has done in the regular season than you. And this is why we saw Justin Herbert. It's not like Justin Herbert and it just showed up. It's not like Josh Allen just showed up last week. You watched him all year, and just weeks ago you were talking about Lamar Jackson. So this is what I have to deal with, Jeff Saturday. I'm a bit confused.
We heard you.
I'm a bit confused nevertheless, Jeff. But we could talk about Max another day. I'm just going to be of the mindset. I could give you like five of those guys, but Justin Herbert, Josh Allen, still questionable, and Tom Brady only for a game, not over the course of a 16-game season at this stage in his career. For all the things that Max spent 3 years mentioning. Go ahead, Jeff.
Yeah, listen, this is – it was interesting when I was listening to you talk about Justin Herbert, Max. I have the same argument for Lamar Jackson. I feel like he's playing handcuffed right now with the people that they've surrounded him with. I love the run game, the run scheme. I think all of that is fantastic. I think you give him some true weapons. If you gave him what Herbert had with the Chargers in Baltimore, wow, right? Like now it's different level scary. You got two dudes who can go take top off and make plays for you and do those things, and then you let him use his legs and make plays that way. Because I think what gets lost in translation of having a quarterback like Lamar Jackson is this. The fatigue that happens to his body is completely different than a Justin Herbert and honestly even a Josh Allen to a degree. I know Allen is athletic and likes to get out, but they don't have the same amount of designed runs. Like I almost equate Lamar Jackson back to Cam Newton early on, right? Where they were using him in third and shorts and fourth and shorts and, you know, third and five, and he's just getting his body beat up, and then you're asking him to be a pocket passer. Like the ask, I think, for Lamar Jackson is greater. That's my one hang up when we start comparing him to other quarterbacks is if you give him those same type of guys on the outside, what does that do to open up his game? I think that's honestly where Baltimore has to focus is we got to go get a and I heard their general manager talk about, you know, chasing the wide receiver, the one wide receiver, whatever it is. That's true. You do need that guy because it opens up and it takes some of the pressure off of Lamar Jackson, who, by the way, continues to show up. And everybody's like, well, when you stop their run game, well, yeah, because who's going to go win on his outside consistently? Who's going to catch it every time he throws it to him? Like, there's so many asks for me. I feel the same way about Lamar Jackson as you do Justin Herbert. The potential is insane. You want to pay him, get him situated, and then get his money right so you can go get him all the guys to really let this offense open up. Because I'm telling you, man, to try to cover him with his legs and arm without putting all the emphasis on him would be absolutely insane.
Jeff, that may be right, and it's not a knock against Lamar. I just need to see him do it with those weapons. I think he can too. As I said, I have great faith in him. I got to see him do it with those weapons. And I'll say this. I am higher on Herbert than most, and I think most people are very high on him. I believe the top five quarterbacks next year won't include Josh Allen, and it's nothing about Josh Allen that's bad. I just think Herbert is ascending that fast. So that's the pick I expected people to say. Justin Herbert, that's how much I think of him. And until I see Lamar do it, you want a playoff game, that's good. All right. But under pressure, after what we just saw, give me Tom Brady.
Let's all honor Kobe Bryant today and bring that Mamba mentality to every single thing you do. Rest in peace, legend. Thank you for everything you did for all of us. We'll see you guys all tomorrow. Much more to talk about as we head into this Super Bowl.